Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show.
She's Lila and I'm Leo.
I didn't get a chance to say that. And we're here tonight to bring you some news. And generally we have an interview, but we...
Our guests have canceled out on us last
night. Kind of a short notice. And
very short. We weren't able to get...
So we didn't have a live interview on our show.
So we apologize for that.
So we don't have...
We're going to bring you the latest and greatest
interview to bring
update
you.
Stuff. And we're going to talk about these things. And
so I'm going to start off with from...
You know, I wanted to thank our listeners. One of the best shows we've had, best Wednesday night shows we've had for an audience, was that one that we did on the Gaza. When I read that article a few weeks back.
That was quite an important.
Yeah, show. We got many, many hundreds of listeners for that, and I was very pleased. So I think we'll continue with this kind of information moments. And read some of these articles.
This article that I'm going to read right now, it's on cell phones, and because so many people have cell phones,
it's
important for people to kind of be cautious
and
think
just,
about it.
Yeah, it's not just the cell phones. It's about the electromagnetic fields that are all around us and how they're affecting our health.
But cell phones are something we think of right away.
They're even worse, yeah.
And this is from EMF, that's electromagnetic fields. Mercola.com sites. And an increasingly alarmed army of international scientists have reached a controversial conclusion. The electrosmog that first began developing with the rollout of the electrical grid a century ago and now envelops every inhabitant on Earth is responsible for many of the diseases that impair or kill us. In 2007, the Bioinitiative Working Group released a 650-page report citing more than 2,000 studies, many very recent, that detail the toxic effects of electromagnetic fields from all sources. Chronic exposure to even low-level radiation, like cell phones, can cause a variety of cancers, impair immunity, and contribute to Alzheimer's disease and dementia, heart disease, and many other ailments. Additionally, every single study of brain tumors that looks at 10 or more years of use shows an increased risk of brain cancer. A recent study from Sweden, in particularly frightening, suggested that if you started using a cell phone as a teen, you have a 5 times greater risk of brain cancer than those who started as an adult. A recent study showed that exposure to very low-frequency voltage signals or dirty electricity can greatly increase your risk of melanoma, thyroid cancer, and uterine cancer. These signals are largely byproducts of electronics, such as modern energy-efficient appliances, television, stereos, and other entertainment devices. New scientific evidence is continually emerging that nearly all of the 20th century human plagues can be tied to some aspect of our use of electricity, including acute lymphoblastic leukemia in children, brain tumors, malignant melanoma, asthma, cardiovascular disease, immune system dysfunction, hormone disturbance, brittle diabetes, sleep disorders, headaches, Alzheimer's disease, and ADHD. Cells in your body can react to electromagnetic fields as a harmful invader, just like they do to other environmental toxins. Two of the more well-known biological impacts from electrosmog are the interruption of brainwave patterns, leading to behavioral issues, and that's where they made reference to ADHD, and the interference to your body's entire communication system, leading to abnormal neurological functions such as dementia, chronic fatigue syndrome, and fibromyalgia. At a cellular level, your cell membrane receptors, We organize electromagnetic fields at a very low levels of exposure, producing a stress response similar to that produced by exposure to heavy metals or toxic chemicals. This can cause the cell membrane to go from an active or permeable state when it allows where it allows nutrients in and toxins out, to an inactive state where the cell membrane is impermeable. During a normal day, your cells will change states thousands of times, but when under constant environmental stress, the membranes can be locked in the inactive state. This is often referred to as oxidative stress, as nutrients are able to enter into the cell while toxins and free radicals are not allowed to leave. There is also real evidence that this inactive state can even have genetic toxic effects, meaning electrosmog is a toxic by both DNA, by damaging DNA, and by preventing your body from repairing DNA, which can be the first step to cancer. We are not really sure what the trigger is that causes health problems, but we know that the electrosmog is definitely a continuing factor. For health, your body must be able to communicate within itself, that is, to be in harmony with the natural rhythm of the earth and all life. The chaotic and unpredictable patterns from electrosmog can create noise in your body and force your body out of harmony. These damaging biological effects have been found at levels far below the so-called industrial and governmental safety limits. Why do such things as MTT acupuncture, 10 units, pacemakers, and many other biological treatments work? Most likely, a major reason why they work is because they focus on getting your body back into the natural rhythm of resonance. Just as you breathe in oxygen from an atmosphere you can't see, your cells are suspended in a sea of vibrational energy that you can't see or feel. That is until it makes you sick. Let's see. It's quite a long article, but let me see if I can.
It was really worth reading, though.
Yeah,
I thought it was
very interesting. How can you protect yourself? Fortunately, you're not completely helpless. There are strategies that can help reduce your exposure and protect you from the constant onslaught of radiation. For over 20 years, building biologists have been studying and educating the general public regarding the negative impact of electromagnetic fields. On their websites are multiple videos and information on the why and what we can and how for dealing with electromagnetic fields. So you can go to www.buildingbiology.net. That's one word, www.buildingbiology.net.
I'm going to go to that myself.
Yeah, Leo's going to go to that. Well, he's doing that.
Buildingbiology.com?
.net. Yeah, buildingbiology.net. Let's see what they say.
Might be a video on there.
Oh, here it is.
Okay.
Welcome to the International, was it at the top? Welcome to the International Institute for
BAU Biology.
And Ecology, the Building Biology.
Must be a French. Featured courses. Indoor air and water.
So they have they tell you about seminars you can take.
My baby's environment.
That's an online course.
101 natural healthy building studies, self study course. I thought there'd be a video or something. Free. Set up your own monthly free
sanctuary.
Sleep in a health sanctuary.
Let's see what that says.
Access base online course. Let's check that out. We're checking out creating a sleeping sanctuary free of electromagnetic field.
Yeah. Five easy ways to create a sleeping sanctuary. One, use battery clocks near your bed. Research has shown exposure to high magnetic fields while sleeping can cause severe long-term illnesses. Many electric clocks produce high magnetic fields. Well, that's one thing. We have a battery-operated clock. That's
but
what I
got,
have.
But we got the ECR and stuff, and that's got a clock on it. So you got to wonder if that... Anyway,
turn off bedroom affecting circuits, as restful sleep is necessary for health and a strong immune system. Electric fields affect your biocommunications, keeping you from sleeping soundly. Eliminate or shield from RF, radio frequency signals from portable phones, cell phones, and wireless devices.
We got one right here.
Well, we could unplug that.
No, but we can't do it without the show.
No, this is for sleeping. For sleeping soundly. Use beds without metal frames.
By wireless devices, too, because we get the
wireless internet.
That's going to do it.
Use beds without metal frames and metal boxes. Metal box springs can amplify and distort the Earth's natural magnetic field, which can lead to a non-restful sleep. Use natural materials. Make sure there are no elevated magnetic fields. Magnetic fields from appliances and building wire can penetrate walls into a bedroom and disrupt the body's communication system.
And then it says, why do we need a sleeping sanctuary? It's about stress and de-stressing. The human body is an amazing, rejuvenating entity that has the ability to repair itself while it sleeps. This is accomplished with its own internal electrical system that functions with very weak electrical impulses. Electrical impulses are generated by the brain and are used for intercellular communication. This is possible because the body is composed mainly of water with a high mineral content, making it highly electrically conductive. Cells know when to divide by vibrating. Brain cells, nerve cells, bone cells all vibrate at different rates in order to communicate with one another. Unfortunately, our bodies act like tuning forks. When you vibrate a tuning fork, external electrical influence, any tuning fork.
Like our body in its vicinity will stop vibrating at the same frequency or rate, and therefore will be confused as how fast to grow.
In a typical sleeping area, electrical exposure from external sources, electrical wiring in ceilings, walls, and floors, is thousands of times stronger than the body's own electrical system. Long-term exposure to these high-level electric fields can impair the body's ability to communicate with itself and impact health. The average person spends approximately a third of their life sleeping. Doesn't it make sense to reduce exposure to electric fields in our sleeping areas? And some people develop symptoms when they experience long-term exposure, especially at night, to elevated levels of electricity, such as headaches, hyperactivity, nightmares, depression, fatigue, eye strain, and muscle cramps. And biological problems associated with electromagnetic stressor falls into two major categories: brain behavioral abnormalities, learning disabilities, altered biocycles, and stress responses. And two is the growing tissue, embryos, genetics, and cancer. Jeez. So that's what's happening to us, folks. We are, And just to go over that one more time, use battery clock near bed. Turn off bedroom affecting circuits. Eliminate or shield from RF.
That's radio frequency.
Radio frequency signals from portable phones, cell phones, wireless devices. Interfere with the body's immune system. Use beds without metal. No metal springs or whatever. Mattress. Make sure there are no elevated magnetic fields. Magnetic fields are from appliances. Building wiring can penetrate walls and bedrooms and disrupt the body's communication system. So, if you're going to sleep, you might as well
go back to the home page.
Yeah. Right there.
free and easy ways to protect your family also.
Let's see. Where do we do that? Where is that?
That's the first one.
Okay. What's this all about? Oh, it's an application of some sort. Step PDF.
I guess you'll have to go to the site yourself.
Yeah, go to the site. It's called, what is it called? I forgot what it's called.
It's www.buildingbiology.net.
Buildingbiology.net. Check it out. There's a whole lot of good stuff on there, and I think you'll be surprised. I'm going to read this quick article because it kind of ticked me off. This article ticked me off, but there's something else tonight I saw that bothered me quite a bit. It was, I don't know if anybody listens to Ed Schultz, you know, the Ed Schultz show. Well, Ed is, I think Ed is just a big-time globalist cheerleader, an Obama cheerleader.
Certainly seems to be
an
Obama cheerleader.
Yeah, definitely an Obama cheerleader, but you know, he's a sellout. And we got Dr. R.K. Pachauri, which is the Indian climate chief's endures attacks at home. This is the guy that's in charge of the UN climate thing, all right? Indian environmentalists have joined critics of Dr. R.K. Pachauri, the head of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, accusing him of damaging the country's environment and protecting polluter corporations who fund his research institute. All right. Now, this
quite an alarming article.
Yeah. Dr. Pachauri has been fighting to salvage his reputation since it was revealed that his recent climate change report includes false claims that the Himalayan glaciers would melt by 2035. But environmentalists in his own country have failed to rally around him and have instead launched their own attacks on a man they claim is harming endangered forests, depleting scarce water reserves, and promoting power companies which emit the carbon gases that cause global warming. They said that they say his consultancy group, the Energy and Resource Institute, had built a university on the ridge, protected forest threatened by construction in New Delhi, and is a contractor for the Commonwealth Games Village, which campaigners have say could severely damage the Yamuna River, the capital's water lifeline. And Lena Srivastava, the Terry's executive, said the local government had given environmental clearance for the university construction. Several campaigners, said Terry, had failed to declare conflicts of interest when it had produced favorable reports and given environmental awards to companies that funded its projects. And Gopal Krishna of the Toxic Watch Alliance told the Daily Telegraph that Terry had promoted waste-to-energy companies that generated power by incinerating waste, in spite of UN concerns that the process led to the emission of dangerous toxins and carbon gases. Pollution from one such plant had caused miscarriages, asthma, and several sicknesses in local villages, he alleged. There is a conflict of interest because Terry was funded by Thermax, an incinerator company, said Mr. Krishna. Hamasi Thakur of the South Asian Network on Dams, Rivers, and People said he began to investigate Terry after it had given an award for environmental excellence to the National Hydraulic Power Corporation for its power project in a remote Uri district of Jammu and Kashmir. He discovered the corporation had a poor record in the area and that it had been criticized in neighboring states for insensitivity to national park forests. It also discovered that the company had paid Terry, which is this group, Energy and Resources Institute. So, Evidence Persuasion, yeah, for the channel that awarded the prize. I'm sorry. I forgot where it was. He discovered the corporation had a poor record, and Evans says, but he also discovered that the company had paid Terry £125,000 to fund a chair in its new university on Delhi Endangered Ridge. His evidence persuaded the panel that had awarded the prize, which included J.S. Verma, the former Indian Chief Justice, to withdraw the award. Terry, which is the, again, Terry is the Intergovernmental Panel on Intergovernmental, the Energy and Resource Institute. So they withdrew the prize under protest. And like I said, the suspicion is that Terry's award greenwashed the poor environment performance, spokesman said, and claims were, and the Terry spokesman said the claims were baseless. But this guy is a rat.
He's
on the take for $125,000. More than that, £125,000. So it's the guy's a thief, and he's a crook, just like all these globalists who are trying to cash in on on this gig. And it really sucks. It really does suck. And hang on a second, I'm just going to go back to. Switchboard here.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll be able to get some.
Yeah.
Are you going to go in for some?
Yeah, I guess I will. I got some time here. Let's see what the.
We have some websites we enjoy going to that get some up to date news. One of them is the DavidIke.com, and he has a. He assembles a lot of news from different places.
A lot of information,
And once in a while, he has some videos on that that have pretty good audio that we've played.
So we're going to do that right now. What David has to say here.
He's an interesting fellow. I have to admire how he assembles everything. He really does a good job.
Descent into barbarism. The U.S. and NATO wage war on the world. And
the argument is one. The argument is one. Capitalism as an effective system to organize society and provide for human needs has expired. The evidence is conclusive. Trillions of dollars to kick off the economy in the U.S. and Europe may have given an ephemeral lease of life to the financial class to spin the casino wheel once again, but it is more apparent by the day that the tentative recovery has sputtered to a standstill, gridlocked by unprecedented levels of personal and national debts. The engine of production, the real economy, is in a state of rigor mortis. The collapse. Go ahead.
Oh, you want me to?
Yeah.
The collapse has been a long time in the making. Decades of easy credit was up to now a way for the ruling class, government, corporations, financial institutions to let the majority of workers subsidize the chronic loss in their livelihoods, which have been drained since the mid-70s by the oligarchy's self-aggrandizement from wage-cutting, regressive taxation, and public spending cuts. The political class, whether liberal or conservative, right or left, have facilitated this giant wealth-siphoning process.
However, the point is that the economic system is now objectively shown to be morbid. And it is impossible for the so-called mainstream politicians to think of any other way of doing business. They are ideologically blind. Recall former Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher's arrogant assertion, there is no alternative. Likewise, U.S. President Barack Obama insists on throwing billions more dollars at the banks and financiers on Wall Street. But this won't kickstart an economy in which millions of workers are without jobs and homes or who are on crummy wages and up to their necks in debt. The profit system has hit an historic dead end, and this gridlock is a result of deep trends to do with the decline in capitalism as a mode of social production. Falling wages and profits and the Comic-Con explosion in financial speculation and debts.
Widespread poverty and human misery is now seen on a massive scale in the so-called developed world. Some 40 million Americans, for example, are subsisting on food stamps. The distinction between developed and developing economies, always a myth anyway, is blurred. The rank of the world's long-suffering poor are swelled with dispossessed blue and white-collar workers and their families from across the U.S. and Europe. Together, more than ever, they stand shut out from those gated havens of obscene wealth for a global minority.
Similar historic junctures have been witnessed. Similar historic junctures have been witnessed before, when capitalism founded from its inexorable tendency to make the rich richer and the poor poorer. Disturbingly, the release valve for the system and its bankruptcy has always been war. Death and destruction is the lender of last resort to an economic system that, despite itself, inevitably polarizes wealth to an unworkable degree. The First and Second World Wars, claiming more than 70 million over a period of less than 10 years' lives, were effectively the ultimate grotesque bailouts.
So 70 million people died.
Mm-hmm.
In our time, war, it seems, has already begun. The U.S. oligarchy and its NATO allies are waging a veritable war on the world, killing, disappearing, and incarcerating millions of civilians in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan, a war that is expanding into Yemen and Somalia and the rest of the Horn of Africa, and the militarization of sea lanes and oceans, and the setting up of forward-projecting military and missile bases in every continent. On top of ordinary poverty and misery, the world is truly seeing another historic descent into barbarism. And given this warmongering dynamic, the growing U.S. antagonism with Iran, Russia, and China is far from an idle threat. It is the logical next step for a deeply illogical economic system.
But history is not inevitable. We are not necessarily programmed to repeat its horrors. A combination of global communications among citizens and political and social consciousness may be enough to prevent a military conflagration and overthrow the misrule of the oligarchy. What is needed is a widening of the recognition that capitalism as a system of social production is finished, and the case has to be confidently made that an alternative is very possible. The alternative is socialism. To those who remain skeptical, they should bear in mind the stark choice that Rosa Luxemburg foresaw for humanity, that is, socialism or barbarism, and we already have the latter.
I think that's too, that is really too structured, too polarizing, if you will.
This article was by Finian Cunningham.
For Global Research.
Yeah.
.ca. I don't really agree with that. I think there are other systems that might work better, because socialism always leads to a form of totalitarianism. It always does, and it just always does.
Mm.
Now we have the best of it, I guess, is the republic. You know But unfortunately,
it's being chipped away at.
Plutocratic, and it has so many real flaws with it. But I mean, unfortunately, you just don't have the people of integrity working in the government. If you did,
it would work
perfectly. You know, the system would work if you had people of integrity, and you have people that would pass the laws to restrict all this corporate crap and all this corporate giving, and make it a publicly funded. And a publicly...
There's nothing wrong with capitalism. It's that we have fascism.
We have fascism, yeah. Exactly.
Capitalism is a great system.
And unfortunately...
Because it has a balance.
Yeah,
but fascism doesn't.
But what bothers me, and this is in my book as well, it'll be coming out in a few weeks, but The Naked at the Mic, but what bothers me so much with the left and the right, but specifically the left, is because they always they have no other recourse other than to throw socialism on you, socialism or communism, and the right has nothing better than to throw fascism at you, okay, and conservatism and republicanism and Limbaughisms and Coulterisms and whatever. So it's like you know, you really can't escape from this kind of this ism unless you take it upon yourself as an individual to look at these things before you consider joining or even consider accepting anything like socialism as a legitimate method of
right now I don't think we're headed.
It's a frightening thing.
We're not really headed in that direction. We seem to be headed more.
I don't want people telling me what to think. I don't want people telling me what to do. I don't want people telling. I don't want that. And you have that into socialism because what that makes is one continual, huge government. Okay, one big. They're looking. This guy who's writing this is obviously a globalist, and he's obviously a one world globalist. You know what I mean? Because he wants socialism. So it's like, you know, I'm sorry that I went to this site, but you know, it was an interesting thing. They are waging war, but when you consider, you know, what they're doing, socialism is no way to protect anybody. You know, it just gives it by having socialism, it just it makes it that much easier for them to take over, all right, and do away with whatever they want to do. Sure, they're killing everybody off. It's part of the global reduction. You know, they're chemtrailing it at death. There are wars all over the world. You know, and conflicts because basically United States, England. Are friggin' aggressive countries, and they're after their resources, and you know they don't care how to get it. And unfortunately, I'm an American. I don't agree with it. I know that millions upon hundreds of millions of Americans don't agree with this, but yet we've allowed ourselves to become powerless, right, by our own apathy, our own indifference. I mean, it's the same thing, but our own. Feelings of ineptness, you know, ineptitude here, you know, like, what can we do? Well, I know for a fact that what we're doing here tonight, somebody's listening out there, and it may inspire them to know a little more. So the next time they hear some shithead on the radio, on television, like Schultz or whatever, well, yeah, well, you don't have to keep warning us, Lila. Right.
Why?
So, but anytime you have some jerko like Schultz or jerko like what's his name, Blitzer or Matthews or some other complete sellout, you have this mechanized media, okay, that's just hauling and droning and moaning, okay, for socialism and for divide and conquer. I mean, they talk about Fox News. I'll tell you, Fox News, for the last couple of months, I found it has carried much more news than MSNBC, NBC, CBS, ABC, or any other affiliated group. You know, I mean it. Turn on Fox, you'll hear something. Okay, on those other stations, you're just going to have an Obama blitz. You know,
well,
an Obama fest. You know, it's like sick.
Okay, Police State USA: college students charged with felony crimes for throwing snowballs. Felony snowball throwing charges have been leveled against two Virginia college students for allegedly pelting a city plow and an undercover police car during Saturday's blizzard. Charles Gill and Ryan Knight, both 21, were nabbed by cops in Harrisburg, where they attend James Madison University. Oh, how ridiculous. Convicted of the felonious snowball throwing, the men each faced between 1 and 5 years in prison and a maximum $2,500 fine.
What kind of craziness is that? A couple of kids in mugshots, poor boogers.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, this is nice of them to put up all this shit. I mean, why are they doing this? Yeah. The smoking gun. Yeah, it's worse that they put up these mug shots and everything else of these kids. I mean, it's just, you know. Oh, Dave, I think you're... India puts on hold first GM food crop and safety crop.
Does he have a video or anything?
I'm looking for one. He usually does have some, but I haven't seen him.
Yeah, right there.
Oh, I want my country back. Professor Robert, okay.
Testifies before House Oversight Committee.
Okay, maybe we can
see what he has to say.
Yeah, I want my country back.
Americans are angry about executive compensation, rightfully so. The executives at General Motors and Chrysler don't deserve to make a lot of money. They made bad products that people didn't want to buy. The executives on Wall Street don't deserve to make a lot of money. They were reckless. They borrowed huge sums to make bets that didn't pay off, and they wasted trillions of dollars of precious capital, funneling it into housing instead of health innovation or high-mileage cars or 1,000 investments more productive than more and bigger houses. Everyday folks who are out of work through no fault of their own want to know why people who made bad decisions not only have a job, but a big salary to go with it. No wonder they're angry at Wall Street. If we keep getting angry at Wall Street, we'll miss the real source of the problem. It's right here in Washington. We are what we do, not what we wish to be, not what we say we are, but what we do. And what we do here in Washington is rescue large companies, large financial institutions, and rich people from the consequences of their mistakes. When mistakes don't cost you anything, you do more of them. When your teenager drives drunk and wrecks the car, you keep giving him a do-over, repairing the car and handing him back the keys, and keep driving drunk. Washington keeps giving bad banks and Wall Street firms a do-over. Here are the keys. Keep driving. The story always ends with a crash. Capitalism is a profit and loss system. The profits encourage risk-taking. The losses encourage prudence. Is it a surprise that when the government takes the losses instead of investors, then investing gets less prudent? If you always bail out lenders, is it surprising that firms can borrow enormous amounts of money living on the edge of insolvency? I'm mad at Wall Street, but I'm a lot madder at the people who gave them the keys to drive our economy off a cliff. I'm mad at the people who have taken hundreds of billions of dollars of taxpayer money and given it to some of the richest people in human history. I'm mad at President Bush, President Obama, Secretary Paulson, Secretary Geithner, and Chairman Bernanke. And I'm mad at Congress. You helped risk takers continue to expect that the rules that apply to the rest of us don't apply to people with the right connections. You've saved the system, but it is not a system worth saving. It's not capitalism. It is crony capitalism. Using a special master for compensation to get our money back is too little too late. Many people argue that because the government handed out the money, the government has a right to dictate how it's spent. But in a constitutional democracy like ours, it's not the government that hates. We, the people, have rights. The Constitution exists to restrain government, not to empower it. Whether government has the right to limit pay is not the question. The question is whether it's a good idea for the government to have the power to set compensation. And despite our anger, the answer is no. Hayek, the Nobel laureate economist, said, "The curious task of economics is to demonstrate to men how little they really know about what they imagine they can design." The special master imagines he can design compensation packages that align incentives while retaining key talent, but it is impossible for any one person, no matter how wise, to anticipate the consequences of such decisions. Nor does he have any incentive to acquire that knowledge. He has no skin in the game. A single individual has been given enormous arbitrary power with insufficient accountability or transparency. This is not good for the rule of law, democracy, or capitalism. By focusing on those who owe the government TARP money, the special master distracts us from other firms that benefited from government rescue, such as Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase. The comfort we receive from seeing compensation reduced distracts us from the policies that created the problem in the first place. The rescue of Wall Street from its own recklessness. It is a charade, a political window dressing to make crony capitalism look respectable. I want my country back. Let's get the government out of the auto business, out of the banking business, out of the compensation design business. We need explicit timetables to disengage from government ownership, including a plan for how the Federal Reserve will draw down its balance sheet. Most of all, we need to stop trying to imagine we can design housing markets, mortgage markets, financial markets, and compensation. I want my country back. I want a country where responsibility still means something, where rich and poor, Main Street and Wall Street, live by the same rules. We don't need a special master to level the playing field. We just need to take the crony out of crony capitalism so we can get back to the real thing. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Russ Roberts testifying before the Oversight Committee. I had to laugh, though. I was just
What we do here in Washington is rescue large companies, large finance.
I was just curious, because right at the beginning, there's nobody there.
Just a few people on the back of the panel.
And those are aides or something.
Yeah, there was nobody there even paying any attention.
I'm looking at this video. The entire front row of this committee is missing. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. There's 10 people in the back, the very back row, but you got to wonder if that's the whole committee.
Maybe that's the whole committee, I don't know.
I don't know, but the rest of the whole thing is all nobody.
Maybe that's the committee, maybe they just sat in the back, who knows?
Yeah, it's higher up.
We don't even really know what the committee is.
It's the House Oversight.
A House Oversight Committee.
Yeah, interesting. Anyway.
And whether they pay any real attention to what he has to say, who knows?
Hey, here's a good one. This one here, kind of interesting. Tony Blair. He's saying that it's a conspiracy theory. Tony Blair attacks Iraq inquiry as part of Britain's obsession with conspiracy theories.
Oh, because he's being held accountable.
Yeah, exactly. Tony Blair yesterday launched an extraordinary attack on the Iraq inquiry, as the chairman warned that he and others could be recalled over gaps in their evidence. In an outspoken interview at the U.S., the former prime minister dismissed the inquiry as part of a continual desire to sort of uncover some great conspiracy. Speaking on Fox News, he said critics of the war were obsessed with conspiracy theories and refused to accept that his motives were genuine. Yeah, right. Asked about why the inquiry was being held, he said, there's always got to be a scandal, as you know, as to why you hold your view. This guy's a freaking moron. There's got to be some conspiracy behind it, some great, deceit that's gone on, and people find it hard to understand that it's impossible for people to have different points of view and hold them reasonably for genuine reasons. You don't have any genuine reason other than greed and incompetence. Okay, this attack came as the chairman of the Iraq inquiry hinted that members of Mr. Blair's government may have given misleading information or even lied. Of course they did. They lied through their teeth.
In an anonymous closing statement yesterday, Sir John Chilcote said high-profile evidence from Mr. Blair, Alistair Campbell, Jack Straw, and others would form only one element of the inquiry. Sir John said his team was now studying tens of thousands of secret government documents, which he said revealed what really went on in the build-up to the 2003 invasion. He said the documents suggested that there were gaps in evidence the inquiry had heard so far. Sources yesterday said the inquiry panel was now weighing up as to whether to order a sensational recall of Mr. Blair and other witnesses later this year. Sir John's comments suggest he is meticulously matching the claims made by witnesses against the government documents. They are likely to alarm several former members of Mr. Blair's government who have already given evidence. Justice Secretary Jack Straw yesterday looked taken aback when he was asked detailed questions about official notes of conversations which apparently showed U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell had told him the U.S. would invade Iraq come what may. Mr. Straw initially said he could not recollect such a conversation, but later agreed to consult his records after members of the inquiry made it clear they knew the conversation had taken place. Sir John yesterday said the documents would form the great bulk of evidence considered by the inquiry. He added they allow us to shine a bright light into seldom seen corners of the government machine, revealing what really went on behind the scenes before, during, and after the Iraq conflict.
Over the next few months, we shall examine all the evidence that we have received, including those documents, that will enable us to see where the evidence joins together and where there are gaps. And Sir John said the inquiry also hoped to hold talks with former members of the Bush administration. Sources said the inquiry panel may travel to Washington this year in the hope of meeting senior figures, including Colin Powell, former National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice, Judge Alberto Gonzalez, who helped persuade Attorney General Lord Goldsmith to change his mind over the legality of the war.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon Brown and David Milbrand will give evidence to the inquiry in the next 3 to 4 weeks. Oh, man, I can't wait to see that. I hope we get a chance to see Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice up there in a British inquiry.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
They won't go.
Nah. I doubt if they'll go, but, they may have to go. Does that make sense?
Hmm.
That's strange.
Yeah.
Besides this, maybe Ivana Trump's in a bikini.
She's a little old to be in a bikini.
Yeah, really too old to be in a bikini. Oui. Oh, man. Well, what else we got here?
Well, that's not going to...
No, I was just really curious about this.
Go back to the
Ivana news. Trump in a bikini is not worth thinking. Well, maybe it depends.
Okay,
what else do we have?
Oh, here's something, too.
Yeah, this I was going to play this last night, and this really caught my eye. And it's about this representative, Michael Pence, says Israel should dictate U.S. policy.
And right? He says, I thought it already did.
Yeah.
This is interesting. We should play this.
I think we should play this.
I have grown increasingly troubled at the mixed signals that this administration is sending to the various parties in the region. It feels for all the world that we are sliding back to the era of the Clinton administration, where it was the ambition of the United States to be an honest broker in the region. Well, I take issue with that. I think President George W. Bush got it right. The United States certainly wants to be honest.
This city is still an honest.
But we don't want to be a broker. A broker doesn't take sides. A broker negotiates between parties of equals. The United States must always make it clear that we are interested in justice in the region. We are interested in compassion, that the American people pray for the peace of Jerusalem, for all the people of Jerusalem. But America's on the side of Israel. And to send any other message than our unwavering support, that we will stand with what the sovereign government and the people of Israel decide is in their interest. I think represents a departure from where the heart of the American people are at. It's been a joy for me, though.
For?
Maybe
ever
since I first arrived on Capitol Hill, whenever any topic of Israel came up, I would run to the House floor and seek time and speak.
Oh, I'm sure you would.
It generated some interesting conversations early on. A number of my more liberal colleagues, some of whom from the Jewish community and Democratic Party, would oftentimes come up to me and say, hey, great speech. They'd say, is there a big Jewish population out there in eastern Indiana we don't know about? And I'd say, no, not very large at all, to my knowledge. And they'd say, well, what's your mother's maiden name? trying to figure out. And I would always take the moment to say, my love for Israel as a Bible-believing Christian, raised in the heartland of this country, is very typical.
Piece of work, isn't it?
That the overwhelming majority of Americans cherish Israel. They want America to stand with Israel. And it's really been the foundation of forging some very meaningful relationships with members on the other side of the aisle and really some people around the country who may not agree with my conservative views on any other issue. But appreciate me giving voice to the views of Bible-believing Christians around America.
He's an obvious Zionist and globalist, and he's paid by all the major corporations. This is CBN News Channel. I don't know what...
Never heard of it.
Me neither, but that's...
Interesting.
Yeah. He couldn't say that shit on national news because he would get clobbered. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He would be torn apart.
You wonder who's he representing?
He's
elected to represent.
He's a freaked out Republican Zionist. I mean, that's pretty sad, sick people that...
Cliffs of Dover to be sold to the
French
to reduce government debt. How about that?
I was going to pull this up yesterday, but...
So the English are selling out their land just like we've sold
out
ours.
Yeah, it's all over the place. What, France has got the money to buy it?
I guess so.
Let's see if I can pull it up here. There we go. White Cliffs of Dover to be sold to the French to help reduce government debt.
For generations, Dover has stood as an indomitable symbol of Britain's freedom and independence. The town, with its white cliffs, port, and sprawling castle, stood at the very edge of the nation's frontier with the continent. But now, part of the proud history is up for sale, and the leading bidder is revealed from the former age, an old enemy, France. The port of Dover is being recommended by government advisors for sale to the French authorities. It's one of a string of public assets which has been earmarked for privatization as the government battles with the record £830 billion national debt. The proposal for the port has prompted outrage. Prospective Tory MP for Dover, Charles Efflix, said it's clear Gordon Brown has no sense of history of our nation or the pride of our town. How dare he consider it all selling to the French? Dover is the English border. The people of Dover have a clear message for him. Hands off our port, hands off the English border.
Can you imagine him selling that piece of work?
Jeez.
Sale of the port of Dover, Europe's busiest ferry port, could net up to $350 million for the Treasury. Its harbor board applied to the transport secretary for voluntary privatization last month. The sale is expected to be rubber stamped, and the leading bidder has emerged as Nordpas de Calais Regional Council, which also owns Calais. The French port is just 21 miles away across the channel, and if sale would mark a dramatic reversal in fortunes of the two towns. Calais was captured by the English under Edward III in 1347, and the occupation lasted for more than two centuries. The port of Dover is the largest British port still in the public sector and made a profit of $15.1 million in 2008. It is a trust port, meaning all revenue are reinvested into it, and it is now seeking $400 million to expand. Bosses anticipate a doubling in freight traffic by 2040. Chief Executive Bob Goldfield said the time is right for the voluntary privatization of Dover. We want to invest around $400 million on the second terminal and need to invest in the existing terminal, but are unable to because of public sector borrowing constraints. We want to throw off the shackles. I don't think that's a good idea, pal. And other major ports were sold off under the 1991 Port Acts, but Dover was retained because of uncertainty over how construction of the tunnel might affect it. Look at this. I mean, these bastards are selling out the most precious thing they have. You know, the White Cliffs of Dover, for crying out loud. What the hell is their problem?
Huh? Huh.
It's just unbelievable. It's just overwhelming. Just amazing. I mean, we're so. Anyway, we got about just a few more minutes. What this is about? Police.
Noon police, Audi, Super Bowl ad.
Oh.
Audi. I don't remember that. But we didn't watch that. We should probably.
I think I did see that. Oh, that's the one where the guy gets arrested. Remember?
Okay. So 3708.
Okay.
Paper plastic.
Plastic.
No.
That's the magic word.
What?
Green police. You picked the wrong day to mess with the ecosystem, plastic boy.
Battery. Let's go.
I saw that on the Super Bowl. I thought it was absolute. That's what they're going through in England right now.
Mm-hmm.
Almost that insanity like that.
Oh, where if you don't recycle or you drop trash.
Yeah, they're fined, or they weigh your bins, and they fine you if you're even an ounce over.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what? I mean, just really stupid shit, and they got kids running around everywhere.
Spying on people.
And these green police that are running around checking out stuff. It is frightening. I mean, just all to give somebody a job so they can beat on somebody's head, you know, beat up their neighbor over a dropped tissue or something, you know.
Here's an interesting thing. Kiss your vitamins goodbye.
United Nations
and CODA.
Yeah.
Kodak Alimentaris have a plan for you.
Yeah, they're trying to ban some of the vitamins.
Oh, giving people, the companies a hard time that have natural health
yeah,
products?
Yeah. And they're bad.
Well, they're doing the same thing in this country. They're just not telling you
didn't
about
make,
it.
They are, I didn't pull it up yesterday because it didn't make a whole, it's kind of, wasn't sure if they were, if it was put out by a pharmaceutical company, a pro-pharmaceutical or what. You read it. You tell me what you think. I thought it was more of a pro-pharmaceutical.
Makers of natural health products say they are bracing for widespread layoffs and millions of dollars in losses after Canada's pharmacy regulators issued a surprise directive recently urging druggists to stop selling unlicensed natural remedies. The order affects thousands of herbal treatments, multivitamins, and other products, most of them waiting for approval from Health Canada under a backlog 5-year program to regulate natural health goods. The National Association of Pharmacy Regulatory Authorities say pharmacists cannot be assured the products are safe until they are granted a government license and should not sell them in those circumstances. Pharmacists are obliged to hold health and safety of public or patient at their first and foremost consideration. Representatives of the natural health industry, however, have reacted angrily to the directives issued last month, predicting it will have little impact on patient safety while triggering an economic crisis for their members. We are talking about job losses. We are talking about loss of income. We are talking about products stuck in warehouses that cannot be sold. Oh, boy, what a mess.
Yeah, and it's just, it's just the pharmaceuticals clamping down on these natural food groups, and it's
they don't want to share the pot of wealth.
No, they want it. They just want to
keep it all for themselves.
Keep it all for themselves. We only got a few more minutes to the show, and I wanted to mention something.
Oh, the U.S. is about to bury the Goldstone report at the UN,
okay.
And that was where they decided that
right.
determined that Israel.
Yeah.
Had committed war crimes and really needed to be prosecuted
and
for it.
And the United States wanted to bury it.
Yes.
Well, of course, you got representatives like that asshole, on there trying to, say that anything Israel does is good.
Okay.
Is okay. Anything they say, if they want to bring us into war, hey, why not? Hey, Hey, Goomba, Like, what the hell is the matter with these people? Yeah, Israeli sources report Sunday the United States vowed to Israeli leaders to bury the report of Judge Richard Goldstein on Israeli war in Gaza last year. The sources added that the Israeli government vowed to respond to the report of Goldstone by forming an independent committee. The United States is set to convene soon to discuss the report, but did not schedule a date for the decision. But Israel sources said that Israel will not show any further cooperation and that the United States will not allow the report to reach the Security Council.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, Israel revealed that a series of talks were held between Israel and American officials in order to define the means to counter the Goldstone report and to bury it.
Yeah, I read an article on this.
I mean, it's wrong, man, what we're doing. I can't support this kind of crap. Can you?
I don't like it.
How can any American support this kind of treason, this kind of crap, okay, of injustice?
Well, it's not treason. What
it's injustice.
It's injustice.
Not only injustice, it's murder. It's condoning murder and genocide.
I can't support.
It's condoning genocide.
The way those people are treated is terrible.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And it's an insult to Americans.
It's an insult to any. rational,
to support something
conscious,
like that.
Moral individual in the world.
Mm-hmm.
All right, this outrage. And, you know, it should be damned. And here's another. Scientists determine good and evil. It's an article against Alan Dershowitz. What a joke he is. He called Richard Goldstone an evil man for censoring Israel's December 2008 Gaza war in a UN report.
Well, he supports anything the Mossad does or anything so far.
If God is synonymous with absolute truth and justice, Dershowitz exposes Zionism as a war on God. All right, Zionists turn good and evil on their head and define good as whatever benefits them. This is the New World Order, folks. Good is what's good for the Jews.
Mm.
Yeah, that's what Dershowitz said. Good is what's good for the Jews.
Well, I think
you know, not what is good for the Jews. What is good for the Rothschild Zionists is what this guy says. They are not the same thing. They just appear to be.
I was just going to say they're hiding again behind
the Jews,
and that's not true. Not all Jews feel that way.
No.
And they're Zionists.
Yeah.
It's not a religion. It's a global movement. It has nothing to do with God or religion.
No, it's a geopolitical movement, and that's what it is. And it's a globalist movement to take over the whole Middle East.
Leo. What they worship, they don't worship God. They worship money.
Mammon is their God. That's known. So anyway, we're out of here, and I want to thank everybody for joining us. We're not streaming anymore, but we appreciate you staying with us. Hope that you enjoyed the show, learned something about things, and join us tomorrow night. Tomorrow night I'm going to be delving into the spiritual, and I'll be doing some tarot card readings for Collins, good night, Lena. And we'll be doing some of that tomorrow night, on Thursday night. So I want to thank you, and have a pleasant evening.